follow the money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Hour number two, Follow the Money here on VSiN. Matt Brown and Mike Somich in for Mitch and Paul. If you tuned in to hear those guys, do not worry. Back in tomorrow, they head up to Omaha doing shows live from up there. If you are in the area and want to stop by Rocco's, by all means, stop by, see what's going on up there. I'm seeing stuff coming through on the Twitter. I think there's some swag that we're handing out up there, Mike. I think people can get some of that. And of course, depending on how the evening goes, maybe you find those guys at the bar and maybe you can hang out with them a little while and have some Jell-O shots or something.
Yeah, who doesn't want a VSiN t-shirt, right? We got some VSiN t-shirts out there. You got to go check those out over at Rocco's. And there is a board that was just tweeted out with all of the hosts from VSiN on the shop board as well. We'll see if we actually can get a Jell-O shot count from the hosts. Who would you make the favorite from a Jell-O shot perspective of the hosts that are out there?
Wait. They're going to be charting how many Jell-O shots they have?
I'm guessing they're not actually going to do it. But they put up a graphic on Twitter with the Jell-O shot challenge with Stormy, Pauly, Jensen, Mitch, Mike, Derek, JVT in the field. Who would you take in that? There, so Stormy, Pauly, Jensen, Mike,
could
Derek,
the field,
JVT.
Could the field then be crew? Because if that's the case, I will take the field.
I mean, then the crew wins easy.
Yeah. I'm going to take the field for sure. I'm taking the field if it includes crew.
I feel like it's Jensen or JVT from the hosts. If I'm setting a favorite in there.
Give me Derek.
That's a good call.
Give me Derek.
Because he doesn't have to be on air, too.
Yeah, Derek can just hang and party for as long as he wants to. This is the thing.
Yeah, it almost feels like it's not fair.
You know, being incredibly wealthy allows you opportunities that other people don't have, and that is one of which is just sitting there and drinking Jell-O shots all night long if you want to. I mean, I have no idea if he wants to. He might have other obligations, but I can tell you what. If he wants to, he can. So I'm going to take Derek.
That would Any be favorite Jell-O shot flavor?
No. I mean, dude, when was the last time we had a Jell-O shot?
I don't want to admit this. Like 18 months ago?
Oh, you had one recently?
Semi-recently.
Okay. Yeah. Were you at like
Halloween
a tropical...
2 years ago.
Oh, I was going to say, were you at a tropical location or something? They were just walking around with the trays?
No. We've got a little, like a big circle in our neighborhood, and one of the parents had a wheelbarrow full of Jell-O shots, just handing them out to parents during Halloween.
Okay. I'm okay with that, actually.
They were good.
Yeah, I'm okay
with
that.
I don't mind it.
You know what?
They were tasty.
You played along. You know? You played along. That's all that really matters. Okay, so we do have the NBA Finals tonight. We have gone over some thoughts here on this one already, but to update you on where we sit, it is sitting 5.5 at most places out there. Now, I can tell you it's 5 out here behind me, and that's the last one. So the FanDuel did move to 5.5, Mike. So the last 5 in the national markets is gone. So if you're in a Circa market, you can get a 5. If not, it's 5.5.
Yeah, I played the Thunder at 5 here. Mm-hmm. I played them last night. I would still play them at 5.5. You can get a -108 over at DraftKings if you're looking for a little bit better priced 5.5 out there. I watched the first game back again. I think this Thunder team is just simply better. The offensive structure we're seeing from the Pacers throughout the first two games and the struggle they're having being able to put the ball in the basket, I don't think just evaporates because they go home. I would expect you're going to get a little bit better role player contribution here when you go back home, but I don't think it's going to be that drastic. And you've got such depth from Oklahoma City as well on the offensive end that I just don't see the knobs the Pacers are going to be able to turn to drastically change how game one should have been, the outcome game one should have had and the outcome game two did have. So I played Thunder -5. If I was betting it now, I'm looking at the alt markets. You can get Thunder -9.5. Last time I checked, that was at a +165 number. Don't mind that as well. Slightly toward the under too, Matt. I felt like it was a very lucky over in game two. We've seen very few transition points in this series. Even off turnovers, we're not seeing them become quick baskets on the other side. This is your first and second transition defensive teams in the NBA. If we're limiting transition points, even with the pace that you expect from the game, without those easy buckets, it's tough to get to 230.
Yeah, it is for me. I look at this in every, I think I'm just jaded from watching the regular season so much where OKC just looked at almost at all times like a well-oiled machine and just at any given night goes out and just could just wax every single team in the NFL. And so I mean in the NBA, and I see, and I look and I see a 5-point spread and I'm going, I have to, you know, I know I'm like sitting going, I have to bet this, right? And so I'm trying to talk myself out of it. You know, I'm trying to make myself understand that this is
here's the thing.
Playoffs and things change and yada yada yada. But boy, I just really, really want to pull the trigger.
Well, if you don't want to lay the 5.5, I mean, you can take OKC minus a game and a half, minus 150 in the series, which I think is also a phenomenal bet. They're going to win game five at home, so we'll make it 2-1 there. Then can they win 2 out of 3 in Indianapolis? I think so. I think they could win 2 out of 2 here in this game. Things over in 5. That's plus 200 right now. So if you don't want to lay the 5 with OKC, I don't mind playing OKC minus a game and a half, minus 150 to win the series as well, Matt, because I just don't see the way the Pacers win 2 more games in this series.
If you are a VSiN newsletter subscriber, you already saw this. And if not, what are you doing? It's absolutely free. Just go to VSiN.com and put your email address in. And then every single day, it's waiting for you when you wake up. Dan Karpik, who is our prop guy over there on VSiN.com, included in the newsletter sometimes is free plays by Bill Ady. He feels very generous, Mike, and he allows you to get some free plays. So while he posted 17 points and 6 assists in game 2, he had just 5 points. And 5 points through the first 3 quarters and looked out of sorts, navigating relentless ball pressure in the series. He's averaged 15.5 points, 6 assists, well below this line while committing 8 turnovers, his most over any 2-game span since March of 2023. That is not coincidence. So his best bet is Halliburton under 25.5 points and assists. That comes in at minus 105 at the time of writing anyway.
That's going to be an interesting one. We saw Halliburton really struggle against Oklahoma City during the regular season as well. 2 of his least efficient games all season came against this OKC defense. I expect Halliburton to hunt points tonight, though, Matt. I mean, he got a lot of flack in the media about not being as aggressive on the offensive side, and he's one of those guys that just always makes the right play, which means he's passing the ball a lot considering how Oklahoma City is defending him. But wouldn't you expect Halliburton kind of hunts points tonight just because of what we've seen early on in these first game 1 and game 2 and how the pressure is kind of on his back to put this offense on his shoulders and be able to go out there and fill that basket up to give them a chance to stay in this game?
Yeah, I mean, the short answer is yes, but how efficient and how effective is that going to be is the deal. I mean, Oklahoma City is just so incredibly good. I know we want to talk about the scoring prowess of SGA, which it's amazing. And we're sitting here, like
awesome.
We talked about earlier, 33.5 is a scoring prowess. The defense of this Oklahoma City team is something that I know defense isn't sexy to talk about, but the defense is such an incredible step up that he might be firing and he might have an aggressive mindset, but how effective is that going to be?
Well, I mean, you look at it this way. Lou Dort guards him the majority of the game. Your break is Alex Caruso coming in off the bench to guard you. That's not a break. That's incredibly difficult with those two guys. And we saw Indianapolis really successful with either a guard pick and rolls in the last couple rounds or 2 big pick and rolls in the last couple rounds. That's really hard to do against Oklahoma City. Are you going to try and swish onto SGA? He's a good defender. You're not going to get like these easy defenders that you were facing the previous series before Indianapolis because of those guard switches, and it just limits their ability to be able to choose who they want to attack. There isn't anyone for SGA to be able, or I'm sorry, for Halliburton to be able to attack consistently in switches, and that bleeds the shot clock. It creates harder shots for other people as well. It's really difficult to get around this OKC defense. They're just relentless and aggressive, and they've got so many plus defensive players. It makes it so hard for Halliburton to be like, well, I'm going to hunt this guy, I'm going to hunt that guy. There is no one to hunt, and that makes it very difficult for Indiana's style of offense.
A reminder, if you want to come out here, and we've talked about how awesome it is to take in sports at this sports book, it will be rocking out there behind me, no doubt, tonight. It'll be rocking up at the pool as well. You can come, $400. All in. So I know you hear all the stuff about all the fees and how expensive everything has gotten. That is not the case if you want to come hang out here at Circa. Visit CircaLasVegas.com now through September the 4th. A 2-night hotel stay, a $100 dining credit, and a $100 beverage credit, and a day bed up at Stadium Swim. It's going to cost you $400. You lay $400 on the table and you walk away, Mike. No additional fees, no other crap that we see, all the different, no taxes, none of that stuff. $400. And you get all of that, 2-night hotel stay, $100 dining and beverage credit, and a day bed at Stadium Swim. No better deal in Vegas.
There literally is not a better deal in Vegas. The 200, so it's $400 both nights, the taxes, the fees, everything's covered. So no additional charges on your room. You're going to want to spend $100 on food at Circa. The burger place is awesome. 8 East is awesome. I like the deli. I've been all over this place, basically my home away from home there. And $100 for drink credit. That goes a long way as well. I had a Casamigos on the rocks up at the bar up above the sports book. It was like $14,
yeah,
Matt.
Yeah.
This is a great deal.
This is it. This is, and again, and then you get the day bed. So, you know, that just throw that in.
And the day bed.
Yeah, throw that in as well. Tigers and the Orioles, as we shift to Major League Baseball real quick, Casey Mize and Zach Eflin, want to get to this one because you do have a play in this one looking over on the Tigers side of things.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about this Tigers team, and I want to be able to take them when it's plus money. Right now, you can get Tigers in the first five at plus 110. Casey Mize has been very good so far this season. I think that continues against an Orioles lineup that has been better the last couple weeks, but still hasn't been good the last couple weeks. I think the Tigers are able to take care of business here, and I like the advantageous setup on the mound. I'm willing to fade Zach Eflin, whose underlying numbers not nearly as good as what he currently has as an overlying stat line. Mize been in line with what he's been able to do. So I'll take the Tigers here, plus 110, first five against the Orioles, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Eflin, low K rate. Now, he does have a low walk rate, so he's not putting anybody on. So you're not getting any of this stuff for free. But he's also just doesn't miss a ton of bats. I think the Tigers getting Parker Meadows back into the lineup and getting him atop that line. Now, he hasn't really broken out quite yet. He had a really good rehab in AAA on his way up. And so I think that he's going to get it going. I think that's a nice little spark. Got a little bit of speed for them, too, at the top of the lineup now. Then you follow that kind of Gleyber Torres, Kerry Carpenter, Riley Green, Spencer Torkelson. I think there's a lot to like about this Tigers team. I know you look at this and it's easy to just take what you've seen so far and just, oh, this Tigers team, get enamored. But I kind of like what they got going on there overall.
Yeah, plus money with a guy like Mize on the mound, it's worth it. It's tough when you've got Scoobel on the hill and you're laying these big minuses. But when you're getting plus money with this Tigers team and the right pitcher, I don't mind them.
Our very own Jonathan Davis joins us next. Let's talk some NHL finals.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Follow the Money here on Wednesday. Matt Brown, Mike Somich in for Mitch and Paul. They're back in tomorrow. They head up to Omaha, get things set up, and like we said, stop by Rocco's if you have a little bit of time. Sitting here looking, and Mike, the A's, they're hitting Hendricks really well. That said, he does have 3 Ks, so I'm like, it's like, okay, minimize the damage. You're allowing a bunch of hits. You're up to 69 pitches. You probably got 2 innings left. Get me one more an inning. Just get me one more an inning. That's all I'm asking for.
But he could get 2-1. That A's lineup likes to strike out. I didn't have Vasquez holding the Dodgers to one hit through four on my bingo card. We did get a home run in the top of the fifth to tie it at one, but we need an Ohtani shot here to give us a chance to cover that half run in the first five, Matt.
Yeah, we had that 2-0 lead for Seattle over Arizona. That just got wiped out as they put up a 5 spot in the bottom of the sixth inning. So now it is a 5-2 in favor of Arizona over Seattle there in that one. Wu just was cruising along and then just got popped. He's now seven. He's up to 7 hits and a walk in 6 innings. Only 3 Ks for him. He gave up a couple of dingers and 5 earned runs. And so it's kind of, you know, it's one of those things. It's kind of what you get with Wu. He is really good for some time, and he will give up the long ball, man. Like, it's just, I don't know. I hate betting on him. I hate betting on the Mariners just in general, actually.
I don't like taking Wu when he's not at home. That park at home makes a big difference for those starters as well. And that Diamondbacks offense has been red hot lately. They can hit the baseball.
Now joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line, you have seen him here on programming. You have seen him over at VSiN.com as well. He is Jonathan Davis at West Coast HKY over on the Twitter machine. Jonathan, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. And the Oilers would like to put up a 5 spot in the bottom of the first tomorrow night.
I mean,
get things rolling.
JD, listen, I don't want to trash your sport. And this is not trashing your sport at all. I just think that this is just us being rational human beings. Is the last kind of 8 minutes of a hockey blowout the most ridiculous sequence of events in all of sports? I mean, because it's like once the blowout happens, all they do is just want to punch each other in the head. And it's like, guys, what are we doing here? Like, just get through the game. Let's move on. Go back into the locker room and let's get done.
Well, okay. So the last 8 minutes of a playoff game is very ridiculous, and it's all about trying to extract a pound of flesh from the opposition. And it becomes meaningless in the next game unless you do something about it. And if you're Edmonton, you know, you've got to come out with a really good performance, because the Toronto Maple Leafs tried to do that to Florida. I think it was in game 4 or 5, and it got, or 4 or 6, and it got them nowhere. So if you're Edmonton, you've got to come out and start pretty strong.
Yeah, those last 8 minutes are supposed to try and set the tone for the next game, get the emotion going for Edmonton, and tell Florida they're not going away. The problem is they're playing Florida's game. And that's what jumped out to me in game 3, is that that was the style of hockey that Florida wants to play. We saw in game 1, Edmonton was able to get their speed through the neutral zone. Connor McDavid was backing up defenders. As this series has gone along, we've seen less and less of that. Draisaitl not as effective. McDavid not as effective there in game 3. And there was just so much time spent in the penalty box because Marchand and Bennett were getting under their skin that they weren't able to get in their hockey game. What does Edmonton need to do to kind of change their mentality here in game 4? Because I don't think it's a talent problem. I think it's a mental issue right now for this Oilers team.
Well, Mike, I think that I think the first 25 minutes of game 1 really set the tone. I mean, Edmonton had an opportunity early on. They were peppering Sergei Bobrovsky mostly off the stick of Evan Bouchard, and they couldn't capitalize. And then when they finally got themselves back in the game with the Corey Perry goal, to make it 2-1, they give up a goal 2 minutes later, and you can't do that. And then it was lights out from there on in. I don't think Edmonton did that, played that same style against Dallas. I felt, I really thought that they tried to extract a pound of flesh from the Stars in the previous round. So they're comfortable with it. Florida does it better. Edmonton's got to find a way to get McDavid on track. Now, what I will tell you, Connor McDavid in the game and games following where he's been held off the score sheet in the playoffs, his last 12 games, 6 goals, 21 points, 7 multi-point games.
So we got to bet that is what you're saying.
McDavid points over.
That's basically where we got to get with all this. So as we sit right now, JD, it is minus 155 Panthers at home, plus 130 for the Oilers on the road as dogs. 6.5 is our total. That is shaded towards the under at minus 125 over at DraftKings anyway. What bets do we have on the game itself before we head into the props?
Sure. So the way I've been approaching the playoffs, been doing this for probably about a month and a half right now, I play both teams on the puck line. 12 of the last 14 games, we've seen the winning team win by 2 goals or more. We had a bit of a bump the first 2 games of this series, but it got back on track. So you're getting big plus money on the Oilers at plus 285. You're getting the Panthers at about plus 164. So I'll take a small profit. That's the way I like to play it. I'd be nervous. Like, I could never play an under in this series. I mean, it's 8 of the last 9 have gone over. Last game had the potential to go under, but play it at your peril. And here's the other thing. Stuart Skinner, game 4, 6-0 in game 4s. And his last 6 game 4s, he's got 2 shutouts. 5 games, 2 goals or less. 4 games, 1 goal or less. 5 of those 6 games have gone under. So, I wouldn't bet the under, but, the only thing I could bet is an over, but I'm staying off the total.
Someone we're both going to be rooting for in game 4 is Sam Bennett. I know you have him at 39-1 to win the Conn Smythe. I've got him at 30-1. If everyone watched Ready, Set, Bet over the weekends, hopefully they have him at 30-1 as well. He's now your plus 140 favorite. Is he able to keep this rolling and just keep scoring every single game?
Well, he doesn't seem to be able to be stopped. And, you know, I grabbed him last night at plus $2 for a goal, which is, to me, is ridiculous. I mean, why? The books just don't have faith in him. I mean, he's gone down to plus 190, but if Draisaitl's around plus 125, why is Bennett so, still even at plus 190? So, yes, he can. I mean, look, 12 of his 14 goals have been on the road, so game 3 was only a second home goal of the playoffs, but come playoff time, ride the hot hand. So I see no reason why to shy away from Sam Bennett.
Talking to Jonathan Davis, our very own hockey expert over at VSiN. How are we playing Evan Bouchard in this one?
Well, we're going to ladder Evan Bouchard's shots on goal prop. I mean, it's 24 shots or 20, was it 22 or 24 shots on goal the last 3 games for Bouchard. He's gone over 7 in each of them. So I'm starting off at 2.5, and I'll work my way up to over 4.5 shots on goal. There's no reason not to, obviously go heavier on the over 2.5, even though it's high, it's heavily juiced, but that one I definitely feel the safest about. One thing I will mention on Sam Bennett, the last goal of the game, Sam Bennett's worth a shot. He's done it four times in the playoffs. I think he's at about 9-1 for the last goal of the game as well.
Now we've got a 2-1 Panthers lead in the series here. Does this feel like a must-win game for Edmonton? I know they were able to come back from 3-0, 4-7 last year, but it feels like if they go down 3-1 here, they are in a world of trouble against a Panthers team that is just absolutely clicking right now. Is it a must-win for Edmonton, and who do you like long-term in this series?
Well, I hate to say it's must-win. I think it was John Madden that said, you know, if you say must-win, then what happens for the next game that you go out? Like, do you just not even show up? So, but in theory, look, if they don't win game four, then I don't see how they're going to win three in a row, even though they did beat the Panthers three straight last year. I just don't see them doing it this time around to take the series. So it's virtually a must win for them. If look, I've got Edmonton at -1.5 games to win the series. If they win tomorrow, they're still alive to me. So I think it's even worth betting them to win the series if you like them tomorrow, as opposed to just playing them on the money line tomorrow as well.
He is Jonathan Davis. Find his work over at VSiN. Of course, he's got an article up over on the site right now. You can go to the picks page. You can see all of the different picks he's got in there. Some more props that you can see as well. Jonathan, appreciate the time today and good luck on all the bets.
Thanks, guys. Have a great rest of your day.
Well, we're sitting here, Mike. It is not going well for the strikeout prop. It was fine. He got out of the inning easily. He didn't run the pitch count up. He's only thrown 73 pitches, so he got out of that thing really easily. Four pitch inning for him, but that did not come with a strikeout. So we're going to need some run good here on Kyle Hendricks.
Yeah, tough to get a strikeout when you just throw four pitches in an inning. I don't actually think that is possible to get a strikeout with just four pitches. The math doesn't math there.
Carry the one.
Unfortunately, we didn't get another run from Los Angeles there, top five. Pretty frustrated that LA only gets two hits and one run against Vasquez, who's just one of the guys I want to fade on that San Diego Padres team. On the other side, very good outing from a Dodgers starter, goes four innings, only gives up one. He looked good, not able to go as deep as you like, but again, the bottom line numbers were just fine. So he's someone I'm going to be looking at in the future if he is going to get another opportunity to start, Matt.
Yeah, head on over there, guys, at VSiN.com for JD's plays. I mean, he's got Bouchard, Perry, Draisaitl, Marchand, Bennett, Schmidt. He's got all kinds of different props that'll be in the article and on the picks page. When we come back, we're betting the cycle. Yes, four different baseball bets from each one of us.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Follow the Money here on a Wednesday. Matt Brown and Mike Somich in for Mitch and Paul. They'll be back tomorrow live to you from Omaha, Nebraska, up there for the College World Series. Mike, getting a little nugget here. We won't talk a ton of football today, but you get Greg Roman, who, if you were unaware out there, the offensive coordinator for the Chargers, talking on Amarian Hampton. And he says, he's the total package. His vision, I'm really pleased with what I'm seeing right now. You don't see a lot of guys find the hole like he's doing right now, which is very exciting. Season rushing yard set at 800.5. You can find 775.5 out there in the market as well on Amarian Hampton. You and I think the Chargers are going to be better this year. There should be additional opportunity. I do understand that it's could be a muddy backfield, but maybe not. I mean, like, maybe they just like Hampton and what he brings to the table, and maybe he gets 80% of the carries. If he gets 80% of the carries, then it's probably a bet to make.
Yeah, I mean, it's a muddy backfield, but how much do we trust Najee Harris? Let's be honest, right? Like, is he a bell cow back? Maybe he, like, I think Najee gets a lot of the short yardage carries, the red zone carries, but you got to think Hampton's involved in a lot of this offense. He's not someone he's a bet on for me. He will be drafted on a lot of my fantasy teams. He's a best ball target for me because I do think his workload expands toward the end of the season. A la Bucky Irving from last year, right? I think that's what we could see from Hampton. And if that is Bucky Irving, he's flying over, right? Bucky Irving obviously went way over that total last year. So, yeah, I guess I don't mind the rushing prop over as well because I do think he takes over that backfield, or at least he's the 1A to Harris's 1B by the middle of the season.
Yeah, because, I mean, you start to look at all of the other brand-name running backs and their props out there. You know, I mean, you're seeing James Cook at 950, Kyren Williams at 1,000, 1,200 on Jonathan Taylor, 1,375 on Derrick Henry, 1,025 on Bucky Irving, 1,050 on Ashton Jeanty. It really is kind of the smallest number. Saquon's all the way up at 1,450. Of course, we're not putting them in the same breath, but Chuba Hubbard at 950, Breece Hall at 925, McCaffrey at 950. The list goes on and on. If we honestly believe he's going to get the vast majority of the carries, because there are some of those guys that I mentioned that also have kind of a backup guy there, then this number is definitely too short.
It's low.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just all kind of goes into what our belief system is as to how much he's going to be the guy.
And you got a good offensive line. You got a head coach that would like to run the football, a coordinator that would like to run the football. You've got Herbert in as quarterback, which kind of forces defense to respect the pass as well, which should be a positive thing for Hampton. So it all lines up for him. He's just got to do it. But I agree with you. Look, if you're playing it, I'm not playing the under. I'll tell you that much.
All right, so we do this on our weekend program. Thought we'd bring it over here and share it with you guys. Betting the cycle, which single, double, triple, and home run. Now, we're not betting on guys to actually do those things. It's just the single is the easiest of the bets, double, and then it progresses all the way up to home run is how we kind of go about all of this. Now, limited, so we have so many day games and games that are going on right now, limited slate to pick from, so we're going to make sure that these bets are still bets that you can get into your account. So I'm going to head all the way to the evening game here, Mike, and that is the last first pitch of the day. The Giants are on the road at the Rockies, and I will play the Giants on the run line at minus 130 for my single here. Not only the Rockies absolutely terrible, but as we talk about those dimensions up there at Coors Field, it's not necessarily the home runs for me. It's the extra base hits and all the things that come along with that. As far as getting run goodness, and they're on the road, so the Giants, we get 9 at-bats no matter what from them. So give me the Giants on the run line.
This game will show up for me a little bit later, Matt. So I'll just leave my comments for the future on that one. But I don't mind Giants 1.5. I don't think the price is bad there at minus 130 either. I'll start out with my single here. Give me Paul Goldschmidt to record an RBI tonight. Plus 110, taking on the Kansas City Royals. And we've talked a lot about Chris Bubik on our show. Really like him as a pitcher, but Goldschmidt's gotten to him in 7 at-bats. He's got 3 hits and a double, so smaller sample size. But I at least know that Goldschmidt will be confident in the box. I like where he's going to be hitting in this lineup as well. Should be in that four hole. So give me Goldschmidt plus 110 to record an RBI. And then producer Corey behind the glass going to kick it off with his single here. Robbie Ray over 7.5 strikeouts plus 105 against that Rockies team as well. So I think we're all going to be picking on the Rockies here, Matt.
Yes, for me, my double Mets team total over 5.5. You're getting some plus money on that at plus 110. The Mets are going and taking on Jake Irvin today. And Jake Irvin sitting with the 4.02 surface ERA, but the advanced and expecteds have this thing at 4.56 from an xFIP, 4.68 from a Sierra, and 5.17 from an xERA. The other thing about this, Mike, is while he has historically over his career run a little bit on the right side of variance from a balls in batted play perspective, because he does give up a lot of fly balls, it's especially low this year at 258. And then his strikeout rate is down 5% from last year. I think this is going to at some point come crashing back down on him. So give me the Mets team total over 5.5, and we will revisit some Mets props here on my next one as well.
Yeah, I'm going to take a team total as well here. I'm going to take an adjusted Astros team total over 5.5, taking on the White Sox today. Got Sean Burke on the mound, and if you look at all of his expected stats, expected ERA, expected slugging percentage, expected batting average against, and expected WOBA, all of them significantly lower than what they should be. The ERA really jumps out. It's currently got a 4.03 ERA. The expected ERA all the way up at 5.31. I think the Astros get to Sean Burke today, so give me the Astros team total adjusted over 5.5. That's sitting at plus 155 out there. For Corey's double, he's going to Wong Hoo Lee for 3+ total bases here. So he's going right back to the Giants lineup here, trying to pick on those Rockies a little bit more. And again, I'll have more from this one shortly, Matt.
So heading back to that Mets lineup for my triple, give me Francisco Lindor 2+ hits, and then Jeff McNeil at 1+ hit. You parlay those together in a same game parlay, plus 232 there on that one. Just gave you the handicap here again on Jake Irvin. The other thing we didn't mention just really quick, the swinging strikes also down 2.5% this year from last, all the way down at 7.1%, Mike. So again, low K rate, low swinging strike rate, And if you look, the BABIP is sitting at 258. League average is 300. Now, he has run on the lower side throughout the course of his career, so his average is probably more like 280, but he's still way, way, way below where he is at as well. His home run to fly ball rate is typically around 13.5%, 14% for his career. It's all the way down at 10.8%. I guess what I'm getting at is there are some negative regression, at least in the cards, for Jake Irvin somewhere along the way. Why not tonight against this Mets team that, by the way, is smashing the ball as well? Only second over the last 2 weeks to Toronto in weighted on base.
Yeah, I like the Lindor one specifically. I played him over 2.5 hits, runs, plus RBIs tonight. That'll come up in the in our pocket bets as well. Last segment of the show, if you want to get everything that we bet across the U.S. Open as well as baseball. My triple, let's just lay 4.5 with the Giants tonight against the Rockies. Right. That's right. -4.5. So massive adjusted run line here. Look, Freeland's been awful at home. Robbie Ray has been very good for this Giants team. I think they're going to hit the baseball. You get +220. I was surprised it actually wasn't more, but I'll still take the 4.5 or -4.5 +220 here for the Giants for my triple. This is an awful Rockies team. I want to bet against them. Let's just take the easiest route by taking an adjusted team line there. For Corey's triple, he's going to go to Jackson Holliday. 4+ total bases, sitting at +300 for this Orioles team. Jackson Holliday been hitting the baseball a lot better lately, Matt.
Yeah, and for my home run, let me go back to the Rocky. I know we just keep picking on the same thing, but Willie Adames, he's actually hitting second today against Kyle Freeland. You're getting +370 on a home run there for Willie Adames. This is, again, a lineup that I'm looking – a team that I'm looking to pick on. And I think the Giants have a decent chance today against a lefty with some of those righty – with some of those lefty crushers, those right-handers they have in the lineup. Willie Adames, if you look, fly ball rate at 47.4% on the season. Mike, he likes to hit it in the air. Why can't we get it up in the air and have it leave the park?
Why not? It's Colorado, Matt. Yeah. Anything can happen. Anything can happen. I've been playing the RBI props against these Rockies consistently. Wrote an article over at VSiN.com if you want to search that and check it out. Specifically, the 2, 3, 4, and 5 hitters against the Rockies have been consistently getting RBIs, and you're getting plus money on the majority of them. For my home run, I'm going to take one of those batters. Give me Helio Ramos here, 2+ RBIs, +330. He should be hitting in the 4 spot tonight. And you're getting a nice little price here on 2+ RBIs. If you put all of them together and parlay Goldschmidt, the Astros team total over, the Giants -4.5, and Ramos 2+ RBIs, that's +3782 for the parlay. Corey gonna go with his home run prop being Riley Green 2+ RBIs for the Tigers, that's 5-1. If you put Robbie Ray over strikeout 7.5, Lee over 3 total bases, Holiday over 4 total bases, and Riley 2+ RBIs, that parlay pays almost 150-1, 147.0921, Matt.
You guys know well and good about the Circa Survivor contest and the Circa Million contest. We talk about it a ton here on the network. We know how big the guarantees are this year. Well, would you like to play for free? You can head to winnercircleproxy.com/VSiN and enter for your chance to win. 2 different entries given away. We're going to give away a Survivor and a Million contest entry over there from Winner's Circle Proxy, and you will get their season-long proxy service as well. So go in winnercircleproxy.com/VSiN, sign up today. 2 different entries, a Survivor and a Million entry being given out. You don't want to miss. Hey, free is good. Free is always good. When we come back, we talked about the things that we think matter over at the U.S. Open, but what about the bets that we have in our account? Let's get to those. I got some outrights. He's got some placement markets. We got all the goods coming back here from the U.S. Open. Follow the money on VSiN. Follow the money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Matt Brown and Mike Somich in for Mitch and Paul. We continue our talk here of the U.S. Open. A little bit earlier, kind of talked about the course itself, how we think it's going to play, some stats that we think are going to matter. Actually, differing opinions here on how we think that this course is going to play, or actually what will be the key to how this course is going to play. And so let's go ahead and see. You ran a model. I run models. We get all this stuff spit out, but you still have to make bets. You have to interpret the model and go in and figure out what that means to you. Now, all of every single version of the models that I ran, I can let you know. Scottie Scheffler was 1, and he was 1 by a mile. So, like, it's not even close when it comes to all of this. So when I'm talking about the different models and the stuff that I ran over, I ran a 36, ran a 24, I ran a super short term, like a 16, which give you a snapshot of either last four or five tournaments if someone got cut somewhere along the way, to try to get a feel for how everyone is coming into with form, and then also just long-term stuff. So that's kind of how I approached it. Didn't matter what I did, Mike, as you can imagine. Scottie Scheffler was, again, number one with the bullet. Quite literally, one of the modeling services I use gives a score. And so Scottie is number one in the 36-round model by the next closest. His score is 96.37, and then the next closest guy is 83.53. Like, that just lets you know the difference between one and two in the model for Scottie Scheffler and everybody else.
Yeah, as someone who's never built a golf model before, it was nice when Scottie was number one with a bullet in mind, because it meant I didn't do anything wrong, at least at the top. Because if he wasn't number one, I immediately would have known I messed up. Look, the win share, the implied odds here around 28% at that plus 275 number. I think that's kind of fair. Like, you know, if he was plus 350, I'd be a little more interested. But yeah, plus 275, a pass for me. I actually thought it was really hard to bet anyone in the outright market, Matt, which is generally against what I do in golf. I'd rather take a shot with someone at 40, 50, 60 to one. But my model has like the top four literally sucking up over 60% of the win share. And the only person in the top four I'd consider betting to win is Rahm at 12 to one. But I thought fair odds were a little bit closer to 14, 15 to one. We saw him 18 to one to win the PGA. So at 12 to one, I'd rather kind of let this play out and see if I can get a better price in week, or take advantage of some of the head-to-heads and other markets that I can take Rahm in to see if I can make money that way.
Yeah, he was the first one to make my card. Plus 1275 is what I got Rahm at. It was a tough decision for me, Mike, because it was either just kind of fade the top all the way, or go with someone that I think on his best day can go toe-to-toe with Scottie and Bryson in this thing and actually win it. And ultimately I decided to go with that, because if you look, like, I didn't factor in driving distance a ton. I did total driving, which is driving distance mixed with driving accuracy. But like, Rahm is right there from that standpoint. He's also accurate. His short game is very, very good. He is playing much better this year than he did last year. I think he cares more. He heard all the rumblings of people saying that him taking the money with Liv, he can't play golf anymore and all of that. And we've seen the results. And obviously you look at the Liv results that you get of him, he's finished his top 10 every single event, you know? And so the consistency, again, the A-plus play, if we can get it, can go toe-to-toe with Bryson and Scottie. And so just given the price discrepancy there, he was the first one to make my card.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I thought that, again, Rahm was the only one I'd bet out of the top four right now at the current odds. I passed on it again because I thought I could get a better price. I did find a Rahm round one three ball against Dustin Johnson and Spieth. You can get Rahm minus 120 in that threesome. I thought that price was very good. I modeled that out at closer to minus 170, minus 180. So Rahm over DJ and Spieth for the first round at minus 120 there. And I also took some Rahm top 20 in the first round at plus 120, as well as put him in a little fun parlay with him in top five, with Neiman top 10 and Griffin top 20. That's 39 to one as well. So I wanted to get exposure to Rahm, but I didn't want to play him to win because, again, I think Scottie wins this tournament so much. And the without market, you're staring at 8 to 1, which is not as much as I'd want, especially when you get like DeChambeau at 5 to 1 without the Scottie market. So to me, it was better to try and attack some of these ulterior bets versus just taking Rahm outright.
Yeah, I know most of the people listening to this understand how golf betting works, but just the really quick aside here of, if every single one of these guys was, I bet a dollar and I just get a dollar back, then Scottie gets all my money every single time, right? I mean, like, it's just, he gets all my money every single time. He does everything well. He has no weaknesses in his game whatsoever at all. And so dollar for dollar, then whatever, but it's not the case, right? And so we're trying to find someone that might can in a peak performance. Let's talk about a 95th percentile performance or whatever, compete with Scottie should he bring his A game as well. And so that's why I ended up on Rahm. Three more outrights for me, and these are all dudes that just modeled extremely well for me. And again, I factored in accuracy a lot more than distance. So a couple of shorties in Shane Lowry and Russell Henley, certainly not going to light up the gun when it comes to off the tee or anything like that. And then Keegan Bradley as well. That really is rounds out the outrights for me in the tournament, is Rahm, Lowry, Henley, and Bradley. I was pretty shocked to see how high Keegan Bradley was modeling for me in a lot of the statistics, but anyone that uses any of these modeling services, you know what I'm talking about when I say green across the board. Like, Keegan Bradley was basically green across the board. Shane Lowry, Russell Henley, same type of deal. And the thing is while they don't, Mike, they're not elite in any of the categories. But if we think a really well-rounded golfer is what we're going to need to win this tournament, which is what I think is going to have to happen, I think you need to drive it straight. I think you need to have decent approach play. When you don't hit these greens, which is inevitable, you need to be able to scramble from around the greens and then at least be able to putt at least a little bit. Lowry, Henley, Bradley, basically inside the top 30 in this field, 156 golfers, in just about every single category. So while they're not elite in any of them, they are good at everything, and maybe the sum of the parts here gets us to where we have a ticket we can at least sweat or monetize come Sunday. So Rahm, Lowry, Henley, Bradley for me in the outright market.
Yeah, Lowry actually performed pretty well inside my model, even though he doesn't hit the ball a ton. So 45-1 there on Lowry, I don't hate that. Bradley was one where if I had had focused on accuracy and not distance, he would have shown up a lot higher because he does score well in a lot of the other metrics that I looked at. But the distance specifically hurt him, especially when I weighted much more toward distance there. One cool bet that you've got over at DraftKings right now is they're putting together groups of five. And I found group B to be very interesting. So if you go over to DraftKings, you look at alternate bets and you go into groups of five, you can get Morikawa, Neiman, Fleetwood, Oberg, and Koepka against each other. Oberg did very poorly on my model, considering how good he has been in some of these majors. A lot of those have mainly been Masters, though, not when you get into the PGA, not when you get into the U.S. Open. Koepka, I think, doesn't have much of a chance. Same with Morikawa. So for me, it was Neiman and Fleetwood that were the two closest. And getting Neiman at plus 280, I thought, was a nice value inside that group of five. How did those five rank out to you? Would you have been interested in Neiman there?
Yeah, I mean, look, Ludvig, no good. His approach game has been trash. Brooks Koepka hasn't played well in a year now. So he's nowhere near anything. So it would come down to Morikawa, Neiman, and Fleetwood. Fleetwood's just a loser, so I don't play him anymore. He can't win. I mean, like, literally, win equity is zero. I know he didn't have to win the tournament. He's always gonna beat these other guys, but you know, I think that Neiman and Morikawa might be in the mix when it all comes down to it. They modeled very, very well for me as well. And so I would need Fleetwood to at least have some sort of win equity if that's the case in all this. Zero for me there. So if it comes down then to a head-to-head between Morikawa and Neiman, given the price differences there, the model to me has them basically even. They're actually neck and neck in just about every one of these versions that I'm looking at here. And so with that, give me the bigger number. So yeah, I mean, Neiman with the bigger number then.
Yeah, a top debutant I thought was an interesting market as well. Ben Griffin been phenomenal on tour. He's played very well the last 3 weeks, specifically the last three events he's played. You get him at plus 380 for the top debutant, so essentially the top debut player in the U.S. Open. I think there was 53 of these when I counted, and 48 of them missed the cut in my model. So getting plus 380 on who I clearly had as the best one, I thought pretty good value there on Ben Griffin. And then I made a make the cut parlay, which I really liked here, Matt. Rahm, Neiman, Straka, and English, plus 270 to all make the cut. English would be the one I was concerned about, but he modeled out very well pretty much across the board on what I did.
Yeah, same for me. I don't think his win equity is very high, but yeah, definitely a guy that certainly popped in the models for me. A few placement market bets. Xander Schauffele, top 10. Xander's round into form. He's much longer now, too, on the tour. And if anybody can grind and just understand that making pars is probably going to get you there towards the end of the day, Xander's that guy. Top 20, Corey Connors, Sepp Straka. They're just really good right now. They are playing really, really, really good golf. I don't know if they can win this thing, but top 20 for sure. And I'll get more exposure through them in the head-to-head market with Connors over Hideki, Straka over Hovland. And then I said, I already bet John Rahm. I'm going to play Rahm over Rory. We'll talk a little bit later whenever we get to our best bets about maybe some alternate strategy. Even if you don't like Rory this week, Mike, if you're playing a bunch of DFS lineups, who's clicking on Rory? I mean, if you get Rory sub 10%, you know what I'm saying? Like, so it comes different from a DFS perspective than it comes from a betting perspective, because nobody's clicking Rory. So if you get him and he pops, you know, like, there's ways to look at it.
A lot of DeChambeaus, not a lot of Rorys.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's one of those things where strategy comes into play whenever we do that. Hour number three, Follow the Money, when we come back.